I want to begin our time this morning by reading from Psalm 67. May God be gracious to us and bless us, and make his face to shine upon us, that your way may be known on earth and your saving power among all nations. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy. For you judge the people with equity and guide the nations upon earth. Let the peoples praise you, O God. Let all the peoples praise you. The earth has yielded its increase. God, our God, shall bless us. God shall bless us. Let all the ends of the earth fear him. All right, well, as you can see on the screen this morning, first of all, it's very good to be back with you and be here in front of you, and I have missed you, and I'm so grateful to be back, and I've been charged this morning, given the task to give something of an update, give a two and a half weeks of activities in about 50 minutes, so we'll see how that goes, but to give you an update in Zambia of my trip there. So let's just jump right in. As we read in Psalm 67, it is God's desire and his intention to glorify himself through Jesus Christ among all the nations. And so I want to give you a little bitty splinter of what the Lord is doing in the world through the nation of Zambia and our church's participation in the work of the gospel there. So for those of you who are not familiar with Zambia, I wanted to show you a map here, and because when I first heard about Zambia, I had no idea where Zambia was. Maybe I would have thought it was in Africa. So when I first went, I literally had no idea. I had to look it up on a map and figure out where it was. And I won't go through the whole story of how I even wound up there the first time. But here's here's just the continent of Africa and the great continent of Africa. All the way on the bottom there, you see that's South Africa. And South Africa is where I'll just spend a couple of days, and I'll tell you about that in a moment. I will fly from Nashville, Washington, into Ghana, down to Johannesburg. I'll wind up there first, and then a little bit above that, a couple of nations above that, you'll see the nation of Zambia. There's Zambia zoomed in, and I'll spend a week in Lusaka, which is the capital city, and then another week up in Ndola, which is close right on the border of the Congo. And so those are the two primary places I've been going for this amount of time. So I just want to walk through my itinerary and show you some pictures and kind of, you know, I'm a storyteller, so I just kind of want to tell you the story of what happened. So I've been, as I mentioned, going there for about 13 years. I wound up in Zambia originally because I was sitting in a Sunday school class with a pastor who had gone to Zambia because of somebody he knew there. It was an acquaintance. And according to his account, nearly died there. And so came back and said, I'm never going back, but I've got some work that I need to see overseen there. So myself and James Williamson went there together. And So James and I went there 13 years ago to check out a specific situation. That ended up not being a good situation, but it connected us with a number of churches and pastors that we've developed this relationship with and even helped start a ministerial college, a seminary in the Copper Belt. So as I mentioned, I flew starting Wednesday, whatever date that was, going from Nashville to Washington Dulles to Ghana, and then into Johannesburg, South Africa. It's about a 24-hour trip with layovers. There's the big bird, the South African airline bird that would take from Washington over to Africa. And just to give you a sense of the scope, the scale of the size of Africa, it takes longer to fly from West Africa to South Africa than it does from America to Africa. It's a massive, massive continent. Now, while there in South Africa, in Johannesburg, the reason for my going there was to meet up with this dear couple and stay with them. This is Michael and Jillian Marsland that I've known since my seminary days. They're originally from that area. They're South African, but we've known one another since seminary. And for a number of years, I think about 10 years, I will often, as I go into Zambia, stop over in Johannesburg, and they'll pick me up at the airport, and I'll spend a couple of days with them. But anyway, this is Michael and Jillian, so he picks me up from the airport, and get to spend a couple of days with them. And we again went on a nature walk, this beautiful park. And these pictures, of course, are not going to do it justice, but we walked and talked about transparency. We talked about discipleship. We talked about just the paradigm shifts we've gone through in ministry. So I've known him now for 23, 24 years, I believe, and has just been a dear, dear friend and very hospitable, and just enjoyed time with them talking about these things, about spiritual health, this beautiful waterfall on this nature hike that we go on, and just have an opportunity then to have tea together, and their tea is really good. So that was what I did on the first 2 days, just spending time with them, talking about all kinds of cultural issues. And I seem like I always have a basket full of new information and new things that I'm excited about that I bring to them. And it's almost like they take a deep breath. They're like, okay, Stephen's coming. Here he comes, you know, and it's just like, and so, so continuing in the itinerary then, Saturday, that was Wednesday, got there on Thursday, then stayed, it's a 7-hour difference. They're 7 hours ahead. So stayed Thursday night, Friday night. And then on Saturday, flew to Lusaka, which is the capital city of Zambia, to settle into the lodge and then prepare for the week, including preaching on the Lord's Day as well as teaching at the school. So on the Lord's Day, I preached 2 times in Lusaka at the Ibex Baptist Church and then at Kabwata Baptist Church. And I did a message called Healthy Teaching from the Pastoral Epistles. And the main gist of that message had to do with sound teaching from the Pastoral Epistles. I used to think about that as sound teaching being this systematic structure of accuracy, and have come to believe since then that it's really talking about doctrine that fosters healthy, flourishing relationships with God and with one another. And so I'd already preached that at Trinity down in Franklin a couple of weeks before I went to Zambia. And little did I know in bringing this message to these churches that I was going to be addressing the very heart of some issues that are going there. So I believe the Spirit certainly led in that in ways that I had no idea. And I'll come to that during the prayer request at the end. So taught on sound teaching at these 2 different churches. And as a matter of fact, the second church, Kabwata Baptist Church, is pastored, the main preaching pastor is Conrad Mbewe. But Lord willing, he'll be with us here next Sunday. And he'll, Lord willing, he and his dear wife will be with us next week. So, see, I don't just go to Africa. I bring Africa back home with me. So, but he's going to be here speaking at the Sing Conference, the Getty Sing Conference, the following week. So preaching 2 times then, the Lord's Day. And then I taught Monday through Friday at Lusaka Ministerial College on the topic of the pastoral epistles. And then through the week, as I'm teaching half days, I'm teaching there by myself. I'll have various meals with pastors and leaders to get to know them, to hear what's going on. One of the things that there's some involvement with and thinking about how to maybe encourage this a little bit more is ACU, African Christian University. And it's that I'm aware of the only Christian worldview classical approach to learning and worldview on the continent as far as a Christian college. There are lots of Christian colleges, but none that I'm aware of or that they're aware of that specifically focus on Christian worldview and apologetics in a very different perspective, different way. Then I got to spend half a day with James. He came and picked me up on Thursday and spent the rest of the day in the evening until fairly late with the Williamson family. So that, of course, was a delight to spend time with them. So here I am and in Lusaka, coming up from Johannesburg. This is Ben, who is the administrator of Lusaka Ministerial College. And then there's Conrad and his wife, Mrs. Mbewe, who came by my lodge to say hello and drop me off a press pot and some coffee, because they know how Americans like their coffee. So that's who, those two are who you'll see next week. This next picture is from Ibex Baptist Church. As you can see, they meet in a tent. They meet in a tent year round. It is very moderate there. And I'll just say something about the weather. The weather, it's their winter, which means it's lovely. During the day, it's short sleeve. The sun's out. It's a little bit hot. But in the evening, it's like jacket weather. And it's like our fall, like a warm fall, cool fall evening. So that the worship took place there under the tent. That was in the morning. And then in the evening, there's Conrad preaching or giving the announcements, preparing for me to preach there at Kabwata Baptist Church. And then there's a picture of the inside of Emmisdale Baptist Church, which is the church that hosts the college. So this isn't a standalone college. This is a college where they do modules. And so they have men from the compounds, men from different churches, who will come in for these week-long modules, and they do them several times a year. And here is Emmisdale Baptist Church, and the main preaching pastor there is Isaac Makashini, that some of you will know from their connection with Nana and Papa a few years ago. And the official registration, I think, was 53. I think I had on average 43 per day attending the studies and filling out the quizzes and the final exam. I think I had 43 total. It's a little bit larger group than I prefer, but it was some of them I've had as students before. Some of them are new, but that's the inside. And you can see, I mean, the building looks lovely, and there's a lot of wood, and the ceilings look similar. So just lovely time there. And there's myself and Isaac Makashini eating at the Spur restaurant, which is, I don't even know if it'd be allowed anymore, but it's kind of a cowboy Indian theme, and they've got big pictures of Native Americans with, you know, headdresses on. I'm like, I'm not sure if you could get away with this with political correctness here anymore, but they have good burgers, I can tell you that. But Isaac and I just fostering that relationship and spending that time together. And there's my dear friends, the Williamsons. Two of their kids are now in college here in the U.S., Sarah and Ian. And then you'll see the others there, got to spend time with them. For those of you who know James has been for several years running a company called Speedy Delivery. That's Mr. Rogers. McSpeedy's, that's what it is. McSpeedy's, they're trying to sell the business he would like. He's a bit of an entrepreneur. He's still doing ministry opportunities, teaching and preaching on occasions. But it was just lovely to spend the evening with them and get to see skateboarding tricks and things that they do and their hobbies and just spend the evening with them. Right. From there, you'll see these are just some city shots of Lusaka. This would be one of the main roads there. And along each side, you'll see these little, looks like makeshift, but they're actually relatively permanent. They're put into the ground. But these makeshift little huts, and those are the places that people come pretty much 7 days a week, and they have their own. It might be something that they make, something that they sell, something, a bakery. It could be furniture. These are just these little huts or buildings that you could drive up. And it's interesting. So they have like a furniture district, and you drive by, and there's a certain area that it seems at some point somebody set up a furniture shop where they were making chairs. Somebody else said, oh, that's a good idea. I think I'll make chairs too. And then they set up something right next to them. And then all the chair guys are all in a row. And there's a whole like a wrought iron gate district and doors. And so for some reason, which I guess is easier because then you don't have to browse around. You can go right to that area and negotiate the prices. The little colorful buildings here are typically they don't sell cell phone plans. They have little SIM cards and you get minutes on that and you use that. And so some of these are little telephone. It says Airtel on there. That's one of their main characters, and MTN, so you can get the particular card for your phone. And then there's just a little fruit stand among a whole row of fruit stands. So for many of these folks, and we're going to look at this actually in the sermon, for many of these folks, it's literally a day-by-day subsistence where they are just trying to get enough capital to buy something. Some people make their... A lot of people make their living selling SIM cards, standing in the traffic, selling fans, selling phone cable chargers, and just almost anything. You can pull up to a stoplight and there's people walking, a dozen people walking with different goods and things that they're carrying. Some of them even are carrying coats and clothing and trying to sell you a dress through the window. And no, thank you. Don't need a dress. And then there's the pretty much the whole crew on the final day. We always take a class picture together. And those are some of the precious men I was able to teach there in Lusaka. What's it? One of these is not like the other. See if you can spot me. All right, so that's Lusaka. Now, I have to throw this in. I put this on Instagram. Some of you will recognize Kip from Napoleon Dynamite. One of my favorite parts of the movie is the end when he and LaFonda get married and Napoleon comes riding up on a stallion. And his song that he sings is "I Love Technology" because that's how he met LaFonda. Anyway, so I just always think about that song when I'm over there and I can literally FaceTime my wife from Africa. 13 years ago, such things did not exist there. And 13 years ago, to have any kind of contact, I would have to go to an internet cafe, pay a fee, and then to send one email might take 15 to 20 minutes because the computers were just eaten up with viruses and took forever, and you had all these pop-ups popping up. And now I literally get off the plane, turn on my phone, it says, "Welcome to Zambia, unlimited data," and calls it 20 cents a minute or something like that. So I can get on Wi-Fi there at the lodge and FaceTime my wife, and just amazing. So I love technology. So there's Kip for you. This is the final day. These are two of the pastors who were formerly my students and who are now pastors and significant influencers within the churches there. They have a wonderful tradition of giving gifts, and here in just a minute. But this is the final presentation. They give you the packages. They let you open it up there. This is a picture of the men just lined up. The food that's brought in this case, it's catered. So these are some of the men lined up there. There's me chatting it up with a couple of the fellas. And then there's, I think this is a picture of their final exam. So what did they get me this year? So they got me a mug, Lusaka Ministerial College mug, and then a couple of lovely books. If you ever want to look at these, let me know, and I'd be glad to lend those to you. But beautiful books, beautiful people, and it all fit in my luggage on the way home. All right, so that goes on for a week. And then the following Saturday, I'll fly from Lusaka to Ndola, settle into the lodge there, the Katuba Lodge, which is a lodge I've been going to for a number of years. Eastern Indian owner who's been trying to sell it for 2 years. I thought it would be sold by now. Lovely staff of men who are servants, lovely men. And been going there to really, it's kind of an English garden, kind of a lodge, just beautiful, well upkept. And so settle into the lodge. Kurt Aaron's going to be delayed. His luggage is going to be delayed. He's pastor of Grace Baptist Church in San Diego, California. And Kurt is someone I don't think I'd actually met face to face. We know one another through Facebook. And then he and his brother Greg and I back in from 95 to 98 were in seminary together. So I know his brother fairly well. And their personalities are real similar. So I felt like I already knew him. Just had a wonderful time getting to know Kurt and about his family. But he labors out in San Diego, and then we would co-teach at this school. I would teach in the morning. He would teach in the afternoon. The next day, we would swap out. He was teaching the doctrine of the word, and I was teaching pastoral epistles again. Then came the Ukrainians. Some of you all have been waiting for this story, haven't you? So the first night, he gets in late. We greet one another. We notice there's a group of men who are over in the next section of the lodge that's kind of a more of a flat than just a singular room. And the music's loud and they're drinking and they seem to be having a good time. And 10, 11 o'clock, we finally get to sleep and it gets louder and it gets louder. And then it wakes us up at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. And then 5 o'clock, they fire it up again. And so it was really, and this is, and I, at one point I'm thinking, you know, Somebody should go say something to them. But these are mine workers, Ukrainians. So we're at this lodge, and these guys are fighting. They're brawling. They've got prostitutes with them. They are drinking. They are yelling. They are, and Kurt has the courage at one point to step out and say, "Hey guys, excuse me, we're trying to sleep in here." They're like, "Oh yeah, yeah." And the music went up and things got louder. So the next day when we got up to preach, and to travel about, we were both quite exhausted. So we let the leadership know of the school, and they immediately made amends. And the Indian, lovely, Eastern Indian man came to see us off, and I was weeping as I was saying goodbye to the servants, because these men have just been so kind and so gracious. And I hated leaving Ketubah Lodge, but we went over then to another lodge and ended up working out fine. So there's a picture at Lusaka Airport, the sun coming in through the lobby area there. There's a set of steps there, just looking down into the main entranceway. This picture is in Indola, and Indola is the very first place I ever flew into Zambia, my first kind of cross-cultural experience. Still have very vivid memories of the original fellow Charles coming up with a whole group of people and them singing to me and this little girl giving me a little plastic flower that I still have in my study. And this is where I first met my Zambian friends 13 years ago, but that was there at the airport. And then one of my favorite things to do is to get a fish and name it after a VeggieTales character and eat it quickly. So I, on that Sunday after the Ukrainian incident on Saturday night, preached one time at Central Baptist Church with, I put his name on here because it's one of my favorite African names, Pastors Mondesters Hakanyanga. And I first met Mondesters, I think it was the very first year, maybe the second year that I went to Zambia, and retained that friendship through the years. And also he labors with Dr. Zulu, who is a mine doctor, who's been a part of Reformed Baptist Churches there for many, many years, and again, taught on healthy teaching from the pastoral epistles. So then came Monday, taught again Monday through Friday at the Copperbelt Ministerial College on the pastoral epistles, and then had various meals with pastors and leaders, and then lovely evening fellowship with Kurt. We actually went out, Kasongo took us out to India, and some of the best Indian food I've had in my life. But enough of my food and my Epicureanism. All right, so, okay, so there's Kasongo and another brother who is our driver taking me to Central Baptist Church. That's Mondesters Hakanyanga and Mrs. Hakanyanga. We went to Dr. Zulu's house afterwards. And this is the inside of Central Baptist Church, their auditorium. There's the outside, some of the fellowship is going on. There was a little bit of confusion of who was going where and whether we were going to have a meal. And then I went to the house and was there with my drivers and the pastors there but lovely folks there. This is their right behind Central Baptist Church here, just across the field, are some tents set up. This is a charismatic church that meets. And this is, as they say, the bush. And this is just kind of further out in the country. No, it's just flat, no hills. As far as the eye can see, this scrubby, bushy. And this is winter, so it's not. It typically gets a little bit greener than this, but this is the bush. And people often ask, "Have you seen lions or tigers or the Big Five?" And no, in these areas, they're too populated. The animals aren't around. I know some of you finished that, didn't you? Bears, oh my, I know you did. But this is out in the bush, but there's not any animals. You might see a snake or something like that, but it's just too populated. And this is the lodge we stayed at, the Abia Lodge, and they had good service there. The picture is a little deceptive. It's quite a large complex. It's the biggest lodge complex that I've been in Zambia. But this is just one small section of it, and it's well kept up. This is the view from outside my back window, and if you all saw on Instagram or Facebook, the fire was just over that rock wall there, and so something is always burning. So if you have asthma, it's actually not a great place to be, but lovely place there. This is hard. Between two of the buildings, there's this like, you'll see the ceiling there, or this roof. And this is kind of a courtyard area. They don't have an outside courtyard, but it's this underneath courtyard. This is pretty well lit up. Usually it was fairly dark, but they have special events there, and they have businesses come in and have training sessions and such. And then this is a lovely, almost like a outdoor yurts. And that's Kurt there hanging out. We would go out in the evening and talk about ministry and talk about our families and talk about our churches, and just had a lovely, lovely time with this dear brother. And there he is, Kurt Arend. All right, so at Copper Belt Ministerial College, the class size was much smaller. I believe it was attendance of 19, which I actually prefer because I'd have a lot more interaction. We actually came up with our own gang sign, which is this. Which is T3 for Timothy, Titus, or 1st, 2nd Timothy, and Titus. So in some of the pictures, you'll see guys flashing our gang sign. But Kennedy, I don't know if you can see Kennedy there. He's the first guy on the right. Great big smile. Well, actually, they're all smiling pretty bigly, pretty largely. But Kennedy's just a joy. Just to spend a week with these guys, several hours a day, and eating with them and spending time with them. And some of them I've had for a number of years. Some of them are pastors. Some of them are pastoral aspirants, as we call them. They're aspiring to the office of an overseer. And they likewise overall did very, very well on the quizzes and just in the final, and had a wonderful time with them. These are the ladies who cook all the food and do all the food. And this is a concrete building they have in the back. They now, some of you will remember from previous years, the kitchen was a thatched roof hutch. Hut. That's what I'm looking for. Hut. And so they would cook out there all day. And now they're actually in the concrete building. So that's them lining up for that. And commonly, people ask about food because it's interesting. There's nothing particularly unusual. It's usually, well, the big three: beef, the chicken, which is pretty good, and then fish. And it might be the large fish, or there was one day we had this big deep fried bowl of little bitty fish, and they were actually quite good. But you'll have something like a meat, you'll have a side green, like these collard greens or something from different plants. They just use everything. And then rice is pretty common. And then enshima, which is cornmeal, which has been ground up. And the way that you eat food there, if you're one of the locals or somebody who gets lassoed in to do it and act like a local when he's not, but is to take the enshima. And it's a big white, it almost looks like mashed potatoes, but a much thicker consistency. And you just pick some of that up and you start rolling it up. It's real tacky. As you roll it up, it stops sticking to you more and more. And finally, you've got it in a ball, and then you dip it into the relish, what they call it, the green stuff, or into the chicken, or into the gravy. And then you eat it instead of using a fork and spoon. You'll just use the enshima for that. So, of course, they were taunting me one day and saying, "Oh, you're not yet Zambian like us." I was like, "I can do it." I mean, so, you know, I got food up to this, it's all over me, but I can do it. I mean, and then this is, two lovely, lovely ladies. This is Lizzie and Violet that I've known for over a decade, and often would go sit out in their hut with them and with their little kids that are around. And That's the kitchen, and you'll see the little pots on there. They have fires. They create this kind of a, it's not fully coal, but it's like a half compressed burnt wood that creates like a charcoal. And they light that up in the morning, and they cook all day, and they're cheerful and sweet. And Lizzie now has been married 1 year, 4 months, I think, to Kasongo, who's the administrator of this school. But anyway, love hanging out with them, you don't see many men hanging out in the kitchen with the ladies, but they're just dear, sweet sisters. And then there's our group at Copper Belt Ministerial College. And you'll see two of these are like not like the others, myself on the far left and Kurt on the far right. And just some dear, dear men, receptive to the word, humble. Many of them suffer in ways that that I have never experienced. So that's the end of that. So my itinerary, then the following Saturday flew in reverse course and then was wonderfully delayed in Washington for an extra 12 hours, which is just what you want to do happen to you when you've been flying for 24 hours and sitting in the same clothes around the same people, eating the airport food and the airplane food. But having said all that, it's really not a big deal. It's to be in a climate controlled contraption that flies over the ocean is, man, it's amazing. To have food brought out to you that's hot or cold appropriately, to have tea and coffee, and to have an entertainment system sitting in front of you that you can choose. I watched the movie Free Solo, by the way. If any of you all have seen that, it's remarkable, crazy, but remarkable. But to be able to do that and sit, and I've got my phone, I've got my iPad, I've got my Kindle, I can do that. So there's no room for complaint. When I think about the brothers and sisters and their families who got on ships and wound up with scurvy and rats and problems and sailing across the ocean and landing on seashores and being killed, you know, within the first day they were there or living among difficult people groups. You know, what I do in the scale of things, I'm thankful for it, but it's a small thing and barely an inconvenience, really. Being away from you, being away from my family, is the most difficult part, but otherwise, just such a privilege to go and to be a part and to invest in these men's lives. So there you'll see in the back toward the right-hand side, three-fourths over, something is burning. I have no idea what it is, but more burning stuff. But this is the tarmac, and that's the little airport. They're actually building a new facility. I think you can see it all the way on the left. This is a panoramic picture. So again, I can get coffee, I can get on this big bird and fly across the world. It's really remarkable. So there's leaving African soil. What was it that delayed the Washington airport experience? Well, got there at 6:30 in the morning after about 23, 24 hours. The plane we were getting ready to board had a seal problem. Not a, but a door seal problem. And that would be worse, wouldn't it? So we ended up getting delayed, watching people get angry, watching Americans get angry at delays is very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's humiliating. Cursing in front of people and upset. It's like they didn't break the plane on purpose when the plane flies across the ocean, for goodness sake. It's not on fire. That's remarkable that this thing even gets up in the air. And so we got delayed a few hours. Okay, so fine, I get it. We have schedules, we've got vacations and so on. But anyway, so I was really glad when they fixed it. I'm not sure if it was up to code or not, but totally kidding. No, so we had to end up waiting for another aircraft, got on another flight later in the day. I was posting that, and I think some people thought it was real. And then there's the first glance of Nashville soil. Okay, so that's a bit of my story, the opportunity to be there. Here's some praise and prayer requests for you, and then we'll have a few minutes, I think, for Q&A if you have any questions. First of all, praise the Lord for his blessing on the entire trip, for myself, spiritually rich times with the Lord, and deepened fellowship with Kirk Aaron, with many of the pastors there, with the brothers who are part of the school. Again, it's just such a privilege to go and to be a part of that. But just thankful to the Lord, no sicknesses, and but good eating, was able to exercise, got good sleep overall, and the weather was beautiful. I just cannot hardly imagine how the trip could have been any better, except for the Ukrainians. They were a little bit of a hassle, but I won't blame all Ukrainians, just that particular group. So praise for that. Pray for the various men, a total of around 65 with both schools, some of them dropping in and out during the week. Pray for the various men attending the classes for their own personal walk with the Lord, going through the pastoral epistles. My determination was not just to give them outlines and content, but to seek to shepherd them and do what Paul was doing with Timothy, because at 21 years of ministry, some of these men have not been in pastoral ministry at all. And so feeling that responsibility to pass on any wisdom that I have to them. So it was trying to not just give them content, but to try to shepherd them and get to know them and encourage them as well. So pray for their own personal walks with the Lord, for their families, for their churches, and the level of grief that they deal with. In Zambia, like many other nations, their funerals. Oh, for those of you who don't know, Pastor Kabwe Kabwe, who's the main preaching pastor in Ndola, his younger brother died of alcoholism while we were there. And what that means is a delay of the funeral. Their whole funeral approach, I mean, it's days on end. People come, they actually set up tents at the graveyard, and people, the men stay outside, and again, they are burning stuff, so there's just smoke constantly. But similar to Cambodia, as Jeremy and I were talking, it's just this huge deal, and you've got to wait for family to come in. But they were dealing with that while we were there as well and had the funeral. But the frequency of death, of infant mortality, of middle-aged, I mean, there's just death that they're dealing with all the time. We all deal with death. But I've had students who've died from various diseases. I've had a student named Ray who was killed walking down the road and being hit by a car. So even in the time that I've been there, I've lost a number of students that we sat in classes together. And so death is just a frequent feature in their churches, in sicknesses, in poverty of a level that would be difficult for many of us to imagine. And then please pray for unity among Reformed Baptist churches in light of present difficulties. And I want to be careful because this is going on the internet. I have friends that and students, former students that I've known for, as I say, about 13 years. And I became aware on this trip of a present ongoing or present accumulating critique, judgment, assessment, claims of compromise within Reformed Baptist churches, which have been as a movement about 35 years. Some really remarkable early history and how the Lord did that. But there's now a significant split between a number of the churches, and I have friends on both sides, and it grieves me. And seeing again some of the trends of what happens when you don't have conversation and when you assume the worst rather than assuming the best. Some of the things that I've just seen and experienced, I'm seeing happen at a church-wide level there, which is very sad and heartbreaking. And to sit with the men and do as much as I can and be a peacemaker, and I've talked to men on both sides, heard their stories and their concerns. There's a book that's going around that's really influential on one side of the issue, and I read that book on the plane. And I'm just really, really grieved and saddened by some of the things that are being said. So I'm working whatever influence as a American guy, white guy, among friends there, and want to be a peacemaker. And it's very saddening. So if you would please pray for conversation, for meetings, for unity and peace among these churches, because goodness gracious, our camp is small enough as it is. And I mean, by our camp, I mean just Christians. Our churches are small enough as it is. And our influence in the world is small enough as it is. And now to have a group of churches that agree with 99% of things to be accusing one another of compromise and problems when they have so much in common, when the world's going to hell, and a lot of the globalization and influence of the internet is hitting them. And I am fearful, even more than us, that they're not ready. And it's not a time to shoot people in your own camp. And so I'm pleading with the Lord to bring unity among those churches. Last prayer request here. I'm scheduled for July 2020 to go back. This will be 2 years in a row to teach Christian worldview and apologetics. I feel a need for a major overhaul over the next year of my material. This is kind of some of my bread and butter stuff that I did for years. I now realize I'm at least a decade and a half behind the current trends and the conversations and apologetics, and I have a significant amount of catching up to do because these men need to be inoculated from cultural issues and to know and understand how to communicate the gospel helpfully to their culture. Again, the influence of YouTube and social media and technology on their young people. And I have a real deep concern for them, for us as well, but for them, and how to do that. So there's a number of things I need to do to really do justice and be a faithful steward of that material. So if you pray for that. And then lastly here, thank you for your prayers, your generous giving. You know, I'm a representative of this church. I go and I greet these other churches in the name of you. And I'm the face and I'm the feet that goes there, but I am very aware I could not do this without you. I could not do this without your tithing and your support and your giving. The finances there and back are all paid by our church. The costs and then when I'm on the ground there, they pay for everything else. So I don't view this as my ministry. I view this as our ministry as a church, and I'm just the spokesman and the tool for that. I'm very glad to do so. But thank you for your generous giving, your support, your prayers. I got many communications of your prayer. And please know that I recognize that I'm the head that might be seen, but I'm sitting on your shoulders, and you're under me. And I know that none of this would happen without what you do here. And so just very grateful for that. All right, so that's a little bit of my story over the past. Now you know I was doing that 2.5 weeks that I was gone. Hopefully you're encouraged by that. We've got just a couple of minutes here according to my clock. So any questions that you might have in particular? Yeah, great question. So Adam asked, is the conflict between the churches doctrinal, procedural, pragmatic? Depends on who you ask. In my estimation, it's an issue of secondary or tertiary issues, of styles of worship, of those kind of things. It's not, as far as I understand, doctrinally, like the 1689. These are all 1689 churches. It's not anything to do with that. It has to do with contextualization in an African context. It also has to do with association. The fact that there are men there who associated and write for the Gospel Coalition, and because the Gospel Coalition is a large umbrella that includes Reformed Charismatics and Reformed Presbyterians and Reformed cultural analyzers, and they've just got a larger, that some of the churches have concerns that that's association that brings compromise and we're watering down the gospel. So they would say it's doctrinal. It is practical, and it's an issue of faithfulness to the regular principle of worship. Those on the other side who are being accused of those things, I think, would say more, no, these, it's not an essence of the gospel. It's not the first things of 1 Corinthians 15, matters of first importance. It's a matter of contextualization. And but it's interesting, depending on who you talk to, the same thing will either be labeled contextualization or compromise. Yeah, that's one is like we're just contextualizing because we are Africans and this is who we are. And in my estimation, a lot of the attempts to compromise, in my estimation, has more to do with boy, I could get in trouble for saying this, English styles, and by English I mean not American, but English styles of worship and hymnology. It's more about that than it is faithfulness to the gospel. Does that answer your question? Yeah, it's, of course, depending on who you talk to, you know, the other people are heroes or villains, so it depends on what narrative you're living in. But I think that understanding contextualization versus compromise, and I think what I'm recommending them all is to sit down and talk. Please have conversations. Okay, one more question, if there is one. Okay, well, thank you for your attention, and let's pray. Thank you for receiving me back, and very, very glad to be with you back. Lord Jesus, thank you that you have promised to build your church, that the gates of hell will not overcome it, and neither will our squabbles and our controversies and our schisms. Lord, we're grateful that your word is truth and it gives us guidance, and we pray for deeper hearts and minds of understanding it and how to apply it in a way that's faithful to the gospel and faithful to the work of the Spirit. So thank you for these brothers and sisters who have supported financially and prayerfully by way of encouragements to bring me there and back again, and to, Lord, just see another rock just put into the work of the church, and another opportunity to influence these men and instruct these men, faithful men who will be able to instruct others also. So thank you for this time together. Thank you for technology. Thank you for the opportunity to take pictures from the other side of the world and so quickly present them. And Lord, just pray for unity. Pray, beg you. We plead with you for these, my friends, for unity and for conversation, for assuming the best and not the worst, for not reading the book from a man from another land and making assumptions, but Lord, to have face-to-face interactions with churches and families. Lord, to not take the easy way out of digitally and through technology communicating differences, but to sit down and have these conversations. We plead with you for the sake of Christ, for the glory of Christ in the Zambia, the nation of Zambia. It's in his name we pray. Amen.